I'm joined today, once again, by Janine Gagliardi.
Hello.
How are you, Janine Gagliardi?
I'm good. I think I might have recently broken my toe.
I saw that.
I think like recently, meaning like in the last 5 minutes, but yes. I have an ice pack on it. We're braving through. We're going to...
You have to walk tomorrow, right?
I do have to walk a bit tomorrow.
Here's my advice. Mm-hmm. And this is, I don't know if this is like the right advice, but mm-hmm. this is the advice I'm going to give you, like a coach would.
Okay.
You just walk right through it.
Okay.
Don't not, because then it'll remember to hurt.
Okay.
You just keep going.
Don't listen to my body.
No, you don't. That's the last thing you want to do.
Okay.
Not tomorrow.
That's good advice.
I got my booster this week.
Oh, you did? Me too.
And what day?
December 1st.
I got mine, and it always affects me so badly, and I felt sick like the next 2 days.
This is my second day, so I'm like,
how did you feel?
I was so achy yesterday.
Good. I'm glad, because here's why. These people, mm-hmm. these shady fucks who are like, oh, it didn't affect me.
I'm like, you don't have a robust immune system then.
It also means like, they're like, I'm better than you.
Uh-huh.
When people say, oh,
you must be a big fucking baby.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
oh,
really?
It didn't affect me. I did a marathon the next day. Mm. Oh, I guess I'm just better than you.
I'm like, really? Because kids get fevers after vaccines and they have the most robust immune systems.
Yeah, so why don't you go fuck yourself?
So my immune system is like a sprightly child and yours is like an old bitch.
So anyway, an old bitch. Today's episode is not about booster shots, although go out and get one.
Oh, sure. Omicron, she's coming.
Oh, boy. Today's episode is about best places to start watching famous TV shows. So you got a famous TV show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I don't know, there's so much. How do I get into it? Where do I start? Mm. When I was thinking about it, I don't know if you were, but I was thinking particularly about shows with not great pilots.
Okay.
Because some shows have great pilots, mm-hmm. and it's like, yeah, that's where you should start.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are some shows that like take a whole season to get going.
Right.
Or shows that are good that just have bad pilots.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of one offhand. I don't think the 30 Rock pilot is exceptional.
It's very funny. I've rewatched the entire series, like I think 5 times front to back, and it's funny, mm-hmm. but it's not great.
It's also not what, and it's not what the show would be.
No.
To me, I think for this list, I tried to think of shows that are like this episode, like this is where you could get into it, but mm-hmm. also if you just wanted to watch one ever.
Okay, yeah.
This is
a good one.
This will give you everything that is on offer.
Okay.
This is a sampler of everything
yes.
there.
Uh-huh.
I have 3 on my list.
Okay. I have more.
What do you have?
I have
92.
I have 5 and then
7 honorable mentions.
I could do, but you know what? I could turn a couple into honorable mentions if you want.
No, we don't have to. We could just go. We don't have to.
All right. One thing I found was I didn't include any, and I found it was almost impossible to include drama on this list because so many, I mean, recent dramas anyway, it's like the plot is so essential
right.
that you can't really jump in unless
right,
it's like a bottle
start.
Episode. You have to
right.
start the story. So, you know,
that's
I was thinking
true.
About big things like Game of Thrones and it's so much like exposition heavy.
No, you
and,
can't like jump
or, like,
in on
Or like mystery
those.
Show. Like not, you have to start at the beginning. So I found it was much, much easier to do comedy.
I only have one comedy, but the other two I have are technically hour longs, but they're genre.
Okay.
So.
Did you include Doctor Who?
Yes.
Okay. Because I don't have that on my list, but that was something that occurred to me that isn't a comedy, but you could do jump-ins pretty
yeah.
easily.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you have to do jump-ins for Doctor Who. No one's starting in like the 1960s.
Right. Exactly. You have to, figure it out. Should I start with that?
Yeah. Or I can just start because my first one on the list was actually for 30 Rock.
All right. Tell me.
So this is season 1. So one of the things that I found with a few exceptions, was that for the most part, season one is usually a good place to start.
Yes.
Because you're getting a feel for what this show is about.
Right. It's the uplift. Mm-hmm. It's the ascension, not the downward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might have great episodes in later seasons, mm-hmm. but you're on the down curve now.
Mm-hmm. So
did you, I'm sorry, can I ask your methodology? Because mm-hmm. I just like would think of shows that I like mm-hmm. and then like go on IMDb and like scroll through the episodes
okay.
and just see like what like jumped at me.
Okay.
How did you do it?
This is how I did it. The thing that launched my idea for this episode, because I came to you with this with something in mind, I actually ended up changing that choice.
Uh-huh.
Was because I got into Arrested Development having watched a random episode.
Yeah.
And it was odd. It was like years before Bill and I even dated, but we were at the same house and they had Arrested Development on, and it was the episode uh-huh. Ready, Aim, Marry Me, which is the Martin Short episode. And okay. it's a wildly funny episode that isn't actually very representative of the show overall. It's sort of about the Martin Short character.
Right.
But it was so funny that I was like, I have to watch that this
is
show.
That's interesting because that is an episode that doesn't really totally fit.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, is it Pee-wee? What's the episode on 30 Rock?
Gerhard.
Yeah, that's a very weird episode.
That was one where... that was another time where I hadn't started watching 30 Rock yet, but I remember seeing the like commercial for that episode coming up.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this
show? It's like
show?
A wild character.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, you know, like I didn't pick like the best episode mm-hmm. of shows because the best episode might not be a good jumping on point, or mm-hmm. it might not be, you know, a best episode could be, you know, like one of my favorite episodes of Doctor Who mm-hmm. is... what's it called? Heaven Sent or Hellbent? The one where it's literally just him alone.
Okay.
It was a Capaldi episode. I don't know if you saw it.
No, I didn't.
He thinks he's in hell. He's like in this castle alone. It ends up being like a trap that's set for him. It's just him the entire episode. Mm-hmm. So it's a bottle episode of just him talking to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be my favorite or even the best episode of Doctor Who. But it's a terrible first episode mm-hmm, because it's mm-hmm. it's... What makes it so interesting is it's not like what Doctor Who is. It's
right.
very much, you know, it's like people used to say, oh, if you want to get into Doctor Who, watch Blink. And I'd be like, Blink is not at all.
No, it's not. It's a great episode.
It's a great episode. But again, the Doctor's not even in it.
He's barely in it.
Right.
He's on a screen.
Right. So like, that's not at all.
Mm-mm.
I'm going to die if I don't look up the name of just that episode.
I didn't watch any Capaldi.
He's my second favorite Doctor. Mm. He's an incredible Doctor. I actually think the Doctor should be old. I like an old doctor.
You like an old doctor? Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Heaven Sent. Heaven Sent, and then the next episode's called Hellbent.
Okay.
Okay. Heaven Sent is just him alone.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm sorry. So what's the 30 Rock one?
So 30 Rock is season one, episode 5. It's Jactor. And I remember yeah. we had started watching the show from the beginning, and I thought it was funny. But when we got to this show, this episode, it was like a watershed moment when I was like, oh, this is really funny. And this could, you know, this could be something. Now going back, I'm like, yeah. oh, this is where you see the seeds of a lot of really important things happening.
Yeah.
So Jactor is an episode where they 30 Rock, they run an SNL type show. It's written by Tina Fey about her time at SNL. Mm-hmm. She's the showrunner. And they're resisting product integration from GE,
yeah.
the parent company, and you know they're saying you have to include more GE stuff in the sketches. And so to do what Jack says is like hippie humor, they want to have one of the GE suits appear in a real sketch, and they ask Jack to do it. And then throughout the course of the episode, you find out that this is like his one weakness. He can't do
right.
like
what
line
do I do
readings.
With my hands?
Oh my God. He's like, can I have two coffee cups? This feels right. This feels natural.
Well, you know, I was actually looking at 30 Rock and I was mm-hmm. looking at that episode. I think it's one of the first times in the series where you see Jack as vulnerable.
Yes. Yes. This is exactly in my notes. I was like, this is the first time you see his vulnerability. He's always been funny, but he's funny because he's mean.
Right.
This is the first time that he shows vulnerability, and it's where, first of all, his character becomes even funnier.
Yeah.
And it's where you see how Liz is necessary to him.
Yes.
Not just that he is you know, this like boss, father figure, mentor figure to her, but that they are in a symbiotic relationship. Yeah. So you understand how their relationship could become much stronger in, you know, future episodes, that they have this thing when she gives him his pep talk and she's like, so nut up and act, because any dum-dum could do this. And he's like, if you were any other woman in the world, I'd be turned on right now. And because whenever there's a female male character in a show, it just like squashes any tension that is you know, potentially building between the two of them, which I love.
Any dumb can act.
Oh, yeah. But there's also interesting things happening with the other characters. I mean, with Jenna, it's, you really actually get a feel for like who each of these characters are. Like, Jenna is a neurotic about her position on the show. Yeah. She's so afraid that she's going to lose her spot. So she decides like to sleep with Jack's boss to ensure her spot. But she ends up sleeping with an extra who's playing Jack's boss in the sketch.
Take care of it.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
She also debuts her song Muffin Top on that episode. Wow. That's a big one. And this is the one where Liz thinks Tracy can't read.
Right.
Now, this, I think, was a rumor after he was on SNL that Tracy Morgan couldn't read.
Right.
I remember hearing like that as a rumor. And then
I heard Norm Macdonald like did an interview where he said he like couldn't do, he couldn't say a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they made, he couldn't do like the F sound.
Mm-hmm.
So they wrote Brian Fellows as like a gag.
Okay.
But then, like, he did it really well.
Mm. I mean, I feel like they're always referencing things that happened, like, in their lives. So, like, when Alec Baldwin was considering a run for mayor, they did the Tuxedo Begins series. And then when Tracy Jordan said all those homophobic things in his stand-up act, they did an episode about that. Tracy Jordan or Morgan that time? Both occurred.
Yeah.
So in this one, I think they address that, but they also address Liz's white savior complex. In it,
right? Because he milks it.
He
and manipulates acts like he can't read.
Yeah, he's like, thank you. I just needed a white lady like you to come along to save me. And then it's what's funny is like after she's like, we'll get you a tutor, Tracy, whatever you need. He's like, thank you so much. I have to leave early today because I need to go to my tutor. He gets into the elevator and opens a paper. He's like, damn, he just gets more and more conservative. Like he's smart, he's savvy, and he knows how to play white people to their their sympathetic racism.
Tracy episode too.
It's and then he says something, one of my favorite Tracy lines. He's like, it's the subtle racism of lowered expectations.
Wow.
Bing Crosby said that. And she's like, Bill Cosby said that. Oh my gosh. But yeah, it's just a good episode all around. Like you see Tracy as savvier than he lets on initially.
Yeah.
And you see Jenna, warts and all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's mostly, it's a strong Jack Liz episode.
It is. It's, and yeah, it's, what is it? Episode 5 of season 1?
Episode 5.
So it's like, it's probably like the first, like we're running on all cylinders kind of episode.
And it's also just like really, really funny.
Yeah. It's a perfect place to start. Okay, well, I'll do a comedy. Community, season 2, episode 10, mixology certification. This is, first of all, Community, I would say actually, I like it all. But season 1 doesn't like exactly know what it's trying to do.
Mm.
But season 2 is like perfect. Mm. Season 2 is its apex. And then it went on for years more. Literally season 2, like I was rewatching it recently and banger after banger. Like I was like, oh shit, this was the next episode after the last. Like every famous episode you think was one after the other.
Mm.
And this was season 2, episode 10. This is the episode where they're having Troy's 20th birthday party. And then Troy says something about like, yeah, everybody is 12 for 2 years because fifth grade is really hard for everybody. And then he's like, oh, wait, mom, what else did you lie to me? And then they're like, wait, that means you're 21. So did you ever watch Community?
I have. I've watched the entire series until it went to Yahoo, and then I didn't watch it anymore. You're
good. So,
I watched the entire series.
Yeah. So do you remember this episode?
I don't remember any by the title. So when you were starting to...
Right.
All it's all course titles.
Right, exactly. So they decide, okay, it's his 21st birthday. We have to go to a bar. Britta and Jeff get into a fight over what bar to go to. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great episode. It's really, really fast. It's really, really punchy. Every character has something to do that's funny.
Mm.
Every character is the dynamic between every character makes sense. Mm. It has some like serious moments. Like we learn that when they go to the bar, we learn that Shirley used to be a drunk, and like she's taking down pictures of herself.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And so that's her story. Mm-hmm. Abed, he goes and makes friends with Paul F. Tompkins, who's clearly like hitting on him, but he's not getting it. And then at one point, Paul F. Tompkins is like, I'm gay. Are you gay? He's like, no. He's like, okay. Because they like spend an hour talking about like Farscape or something. Britta and Jeff fight over what Troy's first drink should be. Mm. So they're fighting, and then Troy like looks up to both of them, and his sort of arc is like he realizes he shouldn't look up to them. Because okay. At the end, he realizes that they were arguing over like what bar they should go to, and they were talking about the same bar. Mm. So, and he's like, you were talking about the same bar. You fought for the last 3 hours and you were talking about the same bar, saying that your bar was great and the other person's bar was lame.
That wasn't they're still pushing the Britta and Jeff.
Yeah. And they make out in the car. Mm-hmm. That's the episode also that we learn that Annie lives in like a shitty neighborhood because they drop her off.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's like, and Troy's like, this is a crazy building that you live in. Oh, and her little story is she gets in with a fake ID and she's like trying to find herself, especially early on. Mm. So like they, Britta finds some ID for her. And it's like the Southern, or she, it says she's from Texas. So she's like starts doing a Southern accent, and then like builds a whole character about it, and like basically spends the whole episode in the bar playing this character. And Piers is in his wheelchair at that point because he broke his leg on the trampoline, and he's just stuck in the corridor. He just can't move out of. He spends like a lot of money to get like one of those really good like Christopher Reeve chairs, and he's just stuck in the little tiny corridor. He can't move, and that's his whole episode. Oh, but then there's a good moment between him and Shirley where he's like, you know, we're the old ones, they make fun of us, whatever. It's everything Community could be and should be. That's why it's like a perfect Community episode. Mm. If you've never seen Community, everything that you find in this episode, that's what you can get in Community.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I'll probably be repeating, and both of us will probably be repeating ourselves a lot, but that's what makes a great episode of a show, something that encapsulates like the essence of the show, the essence of each character, the strengths of the show, the best aspects of the show. Because a lot of the best episodes of shows I find are the ones that are uncharacteristic of that show, where they kind of go off and do something different, but you have to establish like what are the rules of this show, who are the people that we care about, and then you can go do something weird.
Right. Like also in season 2 is the first bottle episode where they don't know who stole the pen.
Oh, they don't leave the study room.
And they don't leave the study room. That's like a beautiful one act play, mm-hmm. but I would never say that's where you should start.
No. Yeah. That's like a list of episodes to explore. Like once you get handle on what this what the show is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've eliminated a few because they're just like, as much as I love them, they're really not good entry points.
No, right.
So for Ready, Aim, Marry Me, for Arrested Development, Ready, Aim, Marry Me was my entry point. But revisiting it, even though it's just aggressively funny, like just the scene where Martin Short as Uncle Jack meets the family, I was howling with laughter. And I mean, I've seen it a million times. But I think the entry point for Arrested Development should be what a lot of people say is actually the best episode of Arrested Development, which is Peer Pressure.
Which one is that?
Okay. So Peer Pressure
is season one.
This is season one. They're still at the model home. Season one, episode 10. And this is the episode. You're going to know once I say this is the J. Walter Weatherman episode.
Okay.
So you get a really, really good feel for the family. Lucille is like hiding assets in the episode. Yeah. You get like the economic hardship that the family is going through. There's the Lucille thing, in addition to hiding assets, she's also trying to play maybe against Lindsay. So she's going through her jewelry collection, and you get like a feel for like George's philandering because of the stories she tells with the jewelry. But the main story is they think that because of the pressure that Michael is putting on George Michael, that he is trying to buy weed because he leaves a note for his Uncle Job. who's like the ne'er-do-well brother in the family, like, can you buy me weed? It's for a friend. In reality, he is buying this weed for his uncle Buster, whose girlfriend, played by Liza Minnelli, is experiencing a very bad spell of vertigo.
Yes.
And I mean, if this is not enough to entice you to watch the show, but just like the first couple of seasons, don't worry about the other ones. And so the whole thing is Michael and Job plan a sting operation to teach George Michael a lesson about not smoking weed. And so they get Job's friends, who are the hot cops. They're a group of strippers. Job used to work with them to, you know, pretend to buy drugs or sell drugs. And then the cops would come and sting. Now, along the way, you find out that their entire life, their father, George, used to teach them lessons using, employing the help of a one-armed man named J. Walter Weatherman. And in the series of flashbacks, you see like the dad open the fridge and get out the milk, and then he pours it into his coffee and there's no milk. And he's like on the phone, I need help. So all the kids are in the car. They're driving to the store. He's like, if only someone had left a note about the milk, we wouldn't be out in this car. He hits a man with his car. His arm goes flying. The kids are screaming. And then the one-armed man comes up to the window and is like, that's why you always leave a note. And so throughout the episode, you're getting these flashbacks of the J. Walter Weatherman lessons over like really mundane things, like that's why you don't yell, that's why you always close the door. And it's just like this series of traumatic incidents in the kids' lives where like they thought they maimed a man or killed a man and his arm always came flying off. But in this, not only do you get like a real sense for all the characters, as we, you know, as we said, but you also get the psychology of the family and what's happening. Like you get the psychological abuse that Lucille puts on, you know, Lindsay and really every member of the family. You get the psychological abuse that George instilled on the children. And you also get like the great irony of the show, which is that like Michael thinks he's better than them. Michael always thinks that he's above them and they're horrible people and he's so much better than they are. But he's doing the exact same thing to his kid. And he's like just as bad, if not worse. Mm-hmm. He may be the worst member of the family in the end. And he's, you know, he's initially presented as the hero. And he's trying to teach his son a lesson. The other thing that I liked about this episode as an entry point is, if you don't know anything about this show or the family, they also show that George Sr., the dad, is in jail, but they don't talk about why at all. Mm-hmm. And so it gives you enough breadcrumbs that you're like intrigued. Like, what is going on here? How did he end up in jail? What is this story? And it's just a crazy funny episode.
Yeah.
So it's it also has the song Big Yellow Joint in it, which is great. So it's I think it's one of the other strengths of a good entry point episode is that it gives you enough that you get a feel for the show, but it also leaves you tantalized where you're like, okay, I want to know more about this.
Okay, I think that's a good episode. Although I do think the pilot is good.
The pilot is very good. The pilot is good, and it definitely, I think if you,
it's a little slower than it ends up being.
Yes. Yeah. This is more, you get the jokes, because this is also where Lucille starts the episode by like air quoting with a martini glass in her hand. So she's spilling liquor all over the place. And then both George Michael and Tobias slip. And when Tobias slips, he's like, was your mother here?
Oh, that's so good. Okay, so Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 1, Episode 9, The Puppet Show.
Okay.
This is an episode.
Wow.
This is, I think, a great entry point for Buffy. Now, it's an episode that doesn't have a vampire in it, yet it involves the school a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It involves the dynamic of the kids a lot. You've got great Cordelia stuff. This was just when Cordelia was just like the funny asshole bitch. And what makes, I think, this episode exceptional, or what, like, I remember watching it for the first time and being like, oh, this show is actually like great.
Because
there's a huge twist in it. Which I will ruin for you.
this decades old show.
Right. So, you know, and Buffy often would have like a Monster of the Week thing. So this was a Monster of the Week. And their school is doing a talent show. And her watcher, Mr. Giles, is forced by the new principal, because the old principal was eaten, forced by the new principal to be like the director of the show. So Buffy, Xander, and Willow are making fun of him, and the new principal hears it. And the new principal, like, they're playing him as like a bad guy. You don't really trust him yet. He makes them be in the show. And one of the kids in the show is this kid, Morgan, who has Sid, who is a ventriloquist dummy. And Sid's like thing is he tells like dirty jokes and he hits on the kids and everyone. People are like, oh, that's funny. But then people start dying. And one girl dies and her heart is removed. And the principal has this thing where he you get the idea of like they live in a hellmouth and it's crazy. Like he'd be like, you know, unlike the last principal, I'm going to make sure the school is in shape. Like, I don't want anybody like cutting class. I don't want people cutting hearts out. I don't want people in the hallways. Like he puts like the crazy shit along with like normal principal shit. And so he's constantly giving Buffy a hard time through this. Because he thinks she's up to something, which is good because a lot of like early Buffy is like Spider-Man. She's doing this great thing, but all the grown-ups around her are like, you're up to no good and I'm going to watch you. And so and they can't just come out and go, I'm a fucking superhero.
Right.
So they take the detention. They take the bullshit that they have to deal with from the adults. So anyway, Buffy's like, I think the dummy is alive. And I think he was like watching me sleep last night. There's some scary moments in it where the dummy's watching her sleep. And it's pretty funny. There's funny stuff in it. Everyone's like, we think you're wrong. But Buffy's right. And that's something that happens a lot in the show. She'll be ahead of everyone else. You've got a fun sequence where they all go to like investigate and they all go to talk to different people. And Xander goes and talks to Cordelia. And she's like, Emily was like my best friend. And he's like, her name was Emma. Then we see someone else has like their lungs removed. Someone else dies and they have their lungs removed. And then they figure out through the research, it's all about research, that there are these demons that there are seven demons and they harvest organs to keep themselves alive. But then the big twist is they finally like talk to the dummy and the dummy's like, okay, I'm alive. But he's not the demon.
Right.
The dummy is actually a demon hunter who killed six of the seven of them and got turned into a dummy. So they were right. The dummy is alive, but he's a good guy and the bad guy's somebody else.
Right.
And that turn takes it from a pretty sort of normal kind of fun genre episode into like, this is so smart. This is so funny. The scene where like the dummy's monologue telling them his story, like they just pan to each character like listening and like they're kind of like, I can't believe this is happening.
They have like dumbstruck looks.
They're like, this dummy is alive and like telling us his tale. And it also ends up being good foreshadowing for Buffy's life because he wants to kill the seventh demon. They don't know who the seventh demon is. It's not the kid who had the ventriloquist dummy because he ends up being a victim. He gets his brain cut out, but the demon doesn't take it because we found that he has tumors. And the dummy thought Buffy was the demon, which is why the dummy was watching her sleep.
Yes, okay.
So it's so smart. And he wants to kill the seventh demon because he'll be free. And she's like, well, you don't have a body anymore. So what do you mean by free? And he's like, I'll just be gone. And there's this sort of thing about, you know, you don't last long as someone who fights demons. And it's an early like bringing up of an idea that becomes more important later on, that how hard her life is and will be.
She ends up finding this like kindred spirit in the dummy, which is wild.
Which is so funny. And then it turns out to be the kid who's the bad magician at the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, and he asked Mr. Giles, he's like, oh, my, he's the demon. And he's like, oh, my assistant, she couldn't be here today. Can I, like, fake cut your head off? Because he wants to steal Mr. Giles' head. His brain. And, you know, they foil it at the end. And they have the big climax with the villain. And then, like, and this is on the stage while the show's going on, but, like, curtains close, so you don't think about it. And then at the end, the curtain opens, and you just see, like, an audience of people just staring. And you see the principal, he has the last line, and he's like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And then, like, over the credits, you hear him say, is it avant-garde? And that's the episode. I think it's funny. You really get who the characters are. You get how the mythology works. you know,
the potential of the show.
Right, right, yeah. right. And so, and it's one of the first really good episodes of, because I think what it was good at that show was subverting tropes. So I think the big twist is really what's like, okay, this will, I think, is a good starting point for Buffy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So season one, I always consider like a throwaway season. And then when I revisited the show, I was like, oh, wait, no, it's There's not. It has really good stuff in there.
It gets going. Like yeah. the first, that's a show that I think has a bad pilot. Like there's good things in the, and it's also way too long. It's two parts because they wanted to do like an event. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't need to be two parts. Mm-hmm. There's like some good things in it, but it's super not good. That's a show that just got better until like season three, and then season four was like a little worse at season three, and then kind of like slowly got worse.
Yeah,
but I still like the later season.
Me too.
A lot of like the standout episodes are in the later seasons, but in general the later seasons are not as good as a whole. You know, the musical episode, Once More Feeling, that's like not a great season.
No,
same thing with Hush.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite episodes, and but it's the college season, which, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in there, but it's the Riley years.
Yeah,
thank God.
Oh, God, he's the worst.
He was a flash in the pan.
And that's also the worst big bad that season, the, like, Frankenstein monster thing.
Yeah, what? Yeah. I feel like they're trying to do a Resident Evil thing there. And
yeah, season four is not great.
That's
Buffy.
Fun. That's Buffy for you. We love Buffy. Okay. So, this was one that is... There's a lot of, I mean, really, honestly, it's like dropping a needle on a record. You could start anywhere and not be disappointed, I feel, about this show. But The Simpsons, so many seasons, 30 plus at this point. We've seen most of them. We've seen almost every season. We're a couple seasons behind, literally just like, I think
this
two
is
or three
really
seasons
a tall
behind.
Order.
I know, it is. And there, I would say, are areas where, I mean, I truly, truly believe there's like 10 episodes you could start with and you'd be fine and you'd be happy and you'd be like, all right, because every episode is sort of like you wipe the slate clean with The Simpsons. It's its own self-contained story for the most part. I mean, they rarely do two-parters, and you're not really worried about like a season-long arc.
Right.
So, I mean, occasionally things come back, but it's not really that type of show.
There are different eras where there are different like modes and different vibes going on.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to describe it, where it's just like, this is the flavor of like the first couple of seasons and then you move on. So this is actually a later days episode. Later days in what, a lot of like, okay, hardcore Simpsons people say that it like only the first six seasons are really good, and then there are people who think like the first 10 seasons are really good. And then I mean, I don't know too many like hardcore Simpsons fan who like passed the first 10 seasons, but we have quite a few.
I think there are actual bright spots.
I agree,
even way later on.
Yeah, and actually there's some like whole strong seasons when you get later on into it, but this is from season 8.
Okay,
this is episode 6, A Milhouse Divided.
Yes.
Okay, one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah.
And what's unusual about this episode is that it is focused on Milhouse and his parents' divorce, but in the course of showing the fallout of their marriage, you actually get a lot of information about the Simpsons' marriage. And it's something that I love about the show. Like, the marriage is like the core of the show. Yeah. Their relationship is the core of the show. And because it's explicitly about divorce, it shows you all the ways in which they are strong and they stay together despite you know, all the challenges that they have and like the obvious imperfections in their marriage.
Right.
And that's something that I really love about this episode. Not to mention that it is uproariously funny from like beginning to end. And it's funny because it's a set of side characters that you don't need to know anything about. Like at one point, Marge is like, is helping Luann like pack up Kirk's stuff. And Luann's like, forget everything you knew about the old Luann Van Houten. Forget her. She's gone. And Marge is like, well, I actually don't really know much about you. She's like, don't worry about it.
I mean, originally, his mother and father, like,
they look identical.
Yeah, that, like, that's the only distinguishing thing. Like, they just made them look like
they look alike. there's the beginning. So the impetus for like their relationship entering like the frame of the Simpsons yeah. household is because Marge is frustrated with their home life. They're sitting in front of the TV eating dinner and she gets really, I just can't even think about like this episode without laughing. She gets really mad. She wants to host a dinner party and she goes like above and beyond for this dinner party. Like she's got all the toilet seats in the dishwasher, like being cleaned. So this is also where you see a lot of the characters that make The Simpsons so great. So Dr. Hibbert's family is at the dinner party. The Lovejoys are there. Obviously the Van Houtens. Then after they divorce and Kirk starts dating, they're at Moe's.
Yeah.
There's just so many. I mean, every scene is a great joke. One of my favorite things is when Kirk is at the Bachelor apartments. He's like, I've got a race car bed, Homer. Do you? He's like, no, I sleep in a big bed with my wife.
Is this the beginning of the Milhouse's dad as a loser?
Yes.
Like, run?
Mm-hmm, because when they're fighting at the dinner party, it seems like her family owned a cracker company and her dad gave him a job at the cracker company and then he tanked it. So he's a loser. He loses his job once they get divorced. He's trying to launch a singing career.
I recently rewatched a lot of the Halloween episodes in October. And the one with the black hole where he's like, hey, Milhouse, I got some money if you want to like get some pizza for dinner. And he gets sucked into the black hole. And the last thing he says is like, you saw that I had the money, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I don't know if it's that episode.
He's such a funny.
Did you ever see the statue in The Simpsons? There's the divorced dad's statue.
Yeah.
And it's like a guy pulling out empty pockets. And on the on the base of the statue, it says, I just don't have it.
Oh, it's so funny.
I know. It's bad. It's really, really good.
It's so sad.
It's pathetic. He's so pathetic. Oh my God. It's also like one of it's a good one. And it's also one of the few episodes that are canon. Because
they stay divorced.
They stay divorced. Well, for a while anyway. Okay. They eventually get back together. But spoilers for a 34-year-old show, I don't know. It's actually canon for the Simpsons marriage as well, because the Simpsons get divorced in this episode.
I don't remember this.
Okay. So Homer goes to, City Hall and asks for a divorce. Because throughout the episode, he's also reminiscing about when he and Marge got married and like the sort of depressing circumstances it was under. Like they're outside like a donut shop and like on the side of the expressway. And she's like, I'm thinking it's less and less possible that all my friends are going to show up and shout surprise now. Right. And it's like sad. So he divorces her in order to give her the wedding he feels she deserves, which is,
so
you know,
stupid.
It's so dumb. And it's such a Homer move because it's incredibly dumb, but it's also really, really sweet. And it gets to the essence of like what he wants to do for her. So they get married at the end of the episode and like all of her friends are there and it's really sweet. But was it a few seasons later? It's a long time later. You find out that Reverend Lovejoy was not licensed at the time. Like his license had lapsed. And so their wedding was not legal and they've been divorced this whole time. Like they've been divorced for years. Yeah. So they weren't legally married for like a long period of time. It doesn't.
Wouldn't that come up in his taxes?
I guess. Yeah, exactly. Right. Does he file? He probably doesn't file. It's Homer. But yeah, it's a great entry point.
It is interesting when things do stay in the canon.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much is like disposable. Even like fundamental things like how they met and like
got pregnant, how old they were, what decade it was.
Right. Right.
Well, as the show has progressed, like they met in the 70s and then it was the 80s and then it was the 90s.
Yeah.
And soon it'll be today.
Yeah. Right. Like do it on purpose now.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
to be like, just keep retelling this story.
Right. Because I mean, yeah, The Simpsons is like modern myth now, right? Like it's just a part of our culture.
So
you just keep telling the story over and over again. yeah. So that's this is a great it's just a great episode to watch. Even if you don't need to rewatch Simpsons or get into it for the first time, just go watch Milhouse Divided. It's a wonderful episode. I'm going to watch it again tonight.
Milhouse Divided.
I could watch it 100 times and not be bored by it. It's so funny.
What's the name of the place that that Milhouse's dad lives?
I think it's Bachelor's Arms. Is it? Yeah. Yeah. And he works for Allied Cracker.
That's so funny.
Oh, God. He's dating this woman. It's like, oh, God, what's her name? It's not Starla. He's like, this is Starla. She's going to help me launch my singing career. She's like, yeah, the keys to the car, lover. I feel like changing wigs. I'm like, are a star and a half. I love it.
All right. So this is the last one I have.
Okay.
This is a cheat because it's two episodes. Okay. It's a two-parter. This is Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
What we call Doctor Who 2005 because... Even though it's gone for a million years, it started in the 60s and went for a very long time. And then it went to the 80s, then had like 15, 16 years off or something. Mm. And then started again in 2005. And it actually has gone since then.
Yes.
So this is 2005.
Mm-hmm. How many seasons did Christopher Eccleston have? Just one?
Just one. This is...
He was a good doctor, though.
Yeah. This was his only season. So this is season one, or what they call series one in the UK.
I don't know.
This is where we find out you're completely xenophobic, but only about...
only to the British.
Only about, like, specific. Like, call it an apartment. What's a flat?
Come on. A flat is something I get on my car.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
So it's series one, episode 9, The Empty Child, and episode 10, The Doctor Dances.
Oh, The Empty Child. Okay.
This is also an episode written by Stephen Moffat.
Okay. But it was pre-Moffat tenure. It was right. Russell Davies,
This
right?
is the Russell Davies yeah. era. This is the beginning. I mean, this is episode 9 and 10 of the first season.
Yeah.
So this is... So actually, the Moffat-isms are present, but mm-hmm. they stand out because it was a much darker time.
Mm, yes, yeah, totally.
Like one of the things that's interesting about this episode is it has a very happy ending, and the power of love kind of saves things, mm-hmm. which kind of became a cliche in the Moffat era of, like, yeah, no one ever died, yeah. and the power of love saves everything.
Does it start in medias res, like all Moffat things?
Kind of. Well, this is the episode...
I've seen it, but I don't remember it that well.
This is a great episode. This episode has everything that you want a Doctor Who episode to have. It's funny. It's got interesting characters. It's got a really scary bad guy, mm-hmm. a really scary problem. It's weird. It's super British because mm-hmm. it takes place... It's in London during the Blitz.
It's the gas mask kid, right?
Yeah. The okay. empty child. Yeah, it's also the first appearance of Captain Jack Harkness.
Yes!
Played by
God,
John Barrowman.
He's great.
Yeah. And he's been a mainstay. He's like was on last season. Like he's...
Really?
Yeah. Like
oh my God, they brought him back.
Yeah, yeah. He comes back. You know, he also had his own spinoff for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What was that called?
Torchwood.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is Doctor Who changed.
Oh, really?
What do they call that? Anagram? So...
Look at them. That's cute.
It's World War II and... it also has a really good, it's essentially a drama. Like you always have these extra characters that you meet that are like just in those episodes. Mm-hmm. And the characters are really good. You meet this interesting character, Nancy, who, what happens is she like is the sort of den mother for like this group of homeless children. Mm. And when the air raids start and everyone leaves their home and goes down into their bunkers, uh-huh. she, with the kids, sneaks into their houses and, like, eats their food.
Uh-huh.
And the doctor, like, finds her. And, like, there's a really funny, charming scene where the doctor's sitting around with the kids. And he's like, I'm for this. This is great. I don't know if this is Marxism in action or a West End musical. And so she's a really interesting character. She talks about her little brother who died. And the ship fell and killed her little brother. It has to do with Captain Jack. It gets so intricate. But basically Captain Jack is trying to pull a con in this episode. Mm-hmm. He makes the doctor follow the ship, this alien ship that lands, but like he was going to try to sell the ship to the doctor, but he landed the ship where a place where he knew the Germans would actually bomb it.
Okay.
So he would sell it to the doctor and then it would blow up before. And that's his whole con.
Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway. 'Cause he's a time traveler.
Right. Rose is kind of doing her own thing in it, and she's flirting a lot with Captain Jack.
Oh yeah, they have like a thing, which is cute.
Yeah, they're standing on his
just
invisible
like sex
ship.
And boots.
Yeah, he's got this invisible ship, and she's standing on there in front of Big Ben. And at one point, she's like, "What time is it?" And he makes the clock chime.
He's a roguish character. He's got like a swashbuckler look.
But it's super cool. You always like World War II episodes of Doctor Who, like whatever. It ties into real history. So the
Blitz was wild, y'all. Yeah. It was a crazy time. Yeah.
There's one of my favorite moments, I think, in the whole show is there's a moment at the end where Nancy is talking to Rose, the Doctor's companion. She says she's from the future. And she's like, what do you mean? How can there be a future? Mm-hmm. And she's like, this is at the end of the world. If you're from the future, why aren't you German? And she's like, I have to tell you a secret. You win.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a touching moment. And so the menace is this little kid who has a gas mask on that's like such a creepy, uncanny gas mask. And he walks around going, are you my mommy? Are you my mommy?
Yeah.
And if he touches you, you basically turn into that. What ends up happening, what the doctor figures out is the ship that landed was a medical ship from this alien planet that has these nanobots. And what they do is they fix you. But they landed on this kid and they had never seen a human before. So the kid was wearing a gas mask. So it basically learned from the kid, oh, this is, I guess, what this species looks like.
Right.
So basically, whenever the nanobots would think they were doing their job, they would, in the air, go to a person, make them have the mask on, and turn them into, and they're always asking for their mommy.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end, you realize that she wasn't his sister. She was actually his mother.
Yeah.
And there's a touching scene where she's like, I'll always be your mother. Mm-hmm. And she hugs him and the nanobots learn what a human's supposed to look like and everybody lives. It's again, that's very common in the Moffat era, but in this era, it's not common.
Right. So it's like a delightful surprise. Right.
And
like,
this is
things
like,
worked out.
The Ninth Doctor has PTSD from the Time War and he's very like distrustful of things. So, you know, he has this big moment, you know, just for once, everybody lives where the nanobots are learning how to like fix the people. He's like, come on, give me this. I need a day like this.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody lives. It's everything Doctor Who should be. It's a perfect place to start Doctor Who.
I feel like Eccleston doesn't get enough love.
He's so good. This is also an episode where him and Rose dance, which is a nice moment. He doesn't get the love he deserves because Tennant came after him and was
so
Tennant popular.
Right, Tennant was such a fan favorite.
But he plays the Doctor in such a, I think, good way. I really like him.
Well, the Doctor dancing has become a thing of like, it's a euphemism for, does he have a sexuality? Like, does he ever have sex?
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that he and Rose dance in this and then it becomes a thing.
Right.
Like people ask him like, well, do you dance? And
No,
I do.
Right. And there's tension between the Doctor, Rose, and Jack because she's like flirting with Jack. And you see the Doctor's a little bit jealous.
Right. Where he's supposed to be this. I don't know that he's supposed to be. He never reads as like asexual, but he almost seems like he's not interested in it.
Eccleston played it in a different way than Tennant. Like Tennant and her definitely have a connection, romantic.
I think the actors have a lot of chemistry though.
Right.
There. Like,
yeah.
She and Tennant had a lot of chemistry naturally.
Right. But this was a scary moment. There's a scary moment where they're in like, he goes to a hospital and he meets this doctor who's like taking care of these patients and they all have the gas mask thing. Doctor Who is examining all the people and he's like, what do you think the cause of death is? And he's like, I don't know. And he's like, they're alive. And then all of them sit up. I actually read today an article from someone much younger than me who talked about how like it traumatized him as a kid and it was such a scary episode.
Mm.
So it's perfect place to start.
Mm.
And if let's say you don't give it, you don't want to watch Doctor Who, you don't want that commitment, but you want to have some taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just watch these two episodes and then get out.
You're
fine.
Just get out.
You'll have some frame of reference of what Doctor Who is.
It's just a great sci-fi story in that case.
Yeah.
I think there's quite a few episodes that are like that where it's just a good sci-fi tale.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely others I could have picked.
Oh, absolutely.
But this is like a nice early one.
All right. I'm going to put Menzies as honorable mention.
I'm sorry, what now?
Menzies. New Girl. I'll do a couple of honorables.
See, that's a show that I love. But I can't tell you the name of any episode.
Yeah. Well, Menzies is, I mean, it's a memorable title.
Right.
All right. New Girl is one of those shows where you can really kind of get in sort of anywhere.
Right.
It's not super important that you know what's going on with the characters,
except
that there's like tension between Nick and Jess.
Right.
They have either dated or not dated. Right. And there's tension between Cece and Schmidt, and they're either together or not together. It's sort of like Friends in that way.
Yeah.
And I think it's a much funnier show than Friends.
Yes.
But yeah, it's like that. It's like a Friends type show. So this is season 2, episode 7. I'm going a little bit more in depth with it than I want to for an honorable mention. But it's just like, it's a very, very funny episode. And I feel like you really, really get how Nick is crazy episode, because this is where like Jess, it's a very uncharacteristic Jess episode. So I think that's where it's weak, because she's really negative and like kind of depressed, and she's unemployed at this point in the series.
Is this before or after she's dating the older rich guy?
Before. Oh, wait.
That's season before. One.
Oh, wait. If it's season one, then it's after.
Oh, it's okay. Two. Right. This is season 2.
But
okay.
I think this is before. I think so. I don't know. What was his name? It's Dermot Mulroney. Russell. That's it. Russell. Russell, who's like in the last episode of the show, which is wild. Right. Because she ends up working for him at some point. Whatever. In any event, this is basically where she and Winston, she's on her period. And of course, this is like. So New Girl is also, it's one woman who lives in an apartment with three men, and she's, you know, the girliest of girls. She is hyper feminine in all like the, I guess, stereotypical way. And when she mentions she feels like she's getting her period, they're all like, oh, come on, like don't mention that. But then you get a lot of Winston's weirdness because he's like, I think I'm having my menses. And they're like, what are you talking about? You're a man. And he's like, women like her are the powerful moon, and they pull everyone into their orbit. And now I'm getting it. He's like, he has one of his most Eddie Murphy moments in this episode, because he does a great, Lamar Mars does an amazing Eddie Murphy at times. Like, his voice really sounds like him. It's a great Schmidt episode. You get that he's like the richest member of the group. You get that he's had a thing with Cece. And there's a character played by Carla Gugino in this episode who is like a VP at his company who's like trying to get him into a BDSM contract, which is ridiculous.
Right.
But mostly it's about Nick having anger issues. And he meets this old man at the park named Tran who like takes him to a pool.
Who I saw in a movie recently.
Oh, really?
I was like, holy shit, that's Tran.
Tran comes back throughout the series, too.
At one point, Nick dates Tran's granddaughter.
Granddaughter, yeah.
Now, do you think, I feel like that wouldn't fly now. Even though it's not that long ago, I feel like a joke like that would be canceled.
With Tran?
Yeah. Because it's just kind of, because it's like, he's a silent old Asian man.
I know. I was watching it thinking like, this is sort of like
it's super xenophobic.
The magical Asian trope,
and
right?
And like, he doesn't speak.
Right. So he doesn't have a voice.
Right.
Well, he does say something. He's like, you are a huge baby. Yeah. He tells him.
One of my favorite jokes though, that was when he dates the granddaughter, it's like his birthday and he invites Tran, and he refers to Tran as his best friend, and the granddaughter's like, you call him your best friend, he does not think that way about you.
Oh, Tran.
Fuck, what did I see him in? God, I was like, whoa, it's Tran. Fuck.
It's an honorable mention. It's in there. I struggled with this one, but I think it's a good entry point. If you like it, you'll like the other one. Pepperwood's another great entry point.
Yeah.
But again, it's like a weird thing where it's not really stereotypical of the show. And then I would say another honorable mention is just Parks and Rec season 2, episode 1.
Is Coach in that episode or no?
No, this is only Winston.
Okay, I see.
Right, because season 1, Coach is there.
Because with all Winston four there, up. I think, is maybe my favorite ever of the show.
Okay. It's just a lot of comedic voices happening, and they all have good chemistry. I mean, a lot of pieces written about New Girl call it friendship porn. Like, it's like what you want friendship to be like.
That's so funny. That's Kind of true, yeah.
Yeah. They're like always having fun with each other all the time. Their arguments are funny.
Right. They have fun little games.
Yeah, they have their own like little in games and things that
like,
they do.
And then like Cece and Winston have a fun like...
It's they a, have a great little... The Cece Winston mess around. Classic mess around. So another honorable mention I would say is Parks and Rec. If you want to get into it, season 2, episode 1, is where she marries the penguins at the zoo and then comes to find that they are two male penguins and then she ends up becoming like a gay rights icon in the town of Pawnee.
Yeah.
It's because season 2 is a lot stronger than season 1. And having watched the entire series, like, I feel like you could go back and appreciate a lot for season 1, but if you wanted to start at season 2, you're really not missing anything.
Like, you don't have...
They didn't know who Leslie was at all.
Right.
Like, they wanted to make Leslie a Michael Scott character, so she's not super likable in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when they make her, like, this really, really endearing, like, she can do anything, she can get anything done, like, all she needs is, like, positive attitude and, like, the help of her friends character, like, that's when they really started hitting their stride.
I think in the very, very beginning, they tried to market it as, like, kind of a spinoff of...
The Office. Absolutely. Yeah. This was The Office like, this for is the public sector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In the first season, you don't have, what's his name? The one who she ends up marrying.
Ben.
You don't have Ben. You don't have Rob Lowe.
No. Yeah. They improved the show. You also got rid of,
Louis C.K. Wasn't he on it?
Louis C.K. was on it, but I think he's on it from season 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The other guy.
Yeah.
Brandanowitz. Yeah.
He just didn't fit.
I know. He was dead weight. Poor guy.
Yeah.
They didn't know what to do with him. They were trying to make him the Jim of the show, but he just never like worked as the Jim.
Can you imagine like you're like in a very famous show, but like the show didn't take off until they got rid of you.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Do you ever watch Taxi?
No.
The protagonist of the first season is this young, boring 20-something kid.
And he's the protagonist?
Yeah, he's like our entry into this world.
Wow.
And he just sucked so bad. I think by at least season 2, maybe even earlier, they just completely drop him.
Wow.
And like he's like the guy, he's like our guy. And then they're just like, this guy's a fucking zero.
Mm.
And they get rid of him and they just make Judd Hirsch the protagonist.
Okay.
Instead of like, they were trying to originally make him as like, kind of like the older mentor.
Mm.
It's interesting. Another case of the show got way better when they got rid of you.
Yeah. Just like they shift focus and you're like, oh, okay, this is where the show needs to be.
Yeah.
It's a real shame you couldn't be here with us.
Yeah, yeah. We really found our stride when we got rid of you.
Mm-hmm.
You, turns out you were the anchor.
All right. Then my last one is just a later season set of episodes for a show. And it's from The Office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the episodes. I think it's Stress Relief or Stress Management. Stress Relief, I think. Oh, okay. Stress Relief Part 1 and 2. You don't really need to watch the second part of this, but it is the Michael Scott roast. And for that alone, I think it's good. And there is a very weak subplot with Pam and Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? Watching a movie with Andy that has it just exists for the show. It's a Cloris Leachman Jack Black movie, and they're like talking about Pam's parents' impending divorce.
I may have not seen this. I've seen a lot of The Office, but I don't think I've seen it all.
Well, this is actually the episode that they chose to air after the Super Bowl one year,
mm-hmm.
and we hadn't watched any of The Office, and It's a relentlessly funny episode. Uh-huh. Like, it just keeps going and going and just being insanely funny the whole way through. And you, like,
what's
you get
the main plot?
The main plot is Stanley has a heart attack because Dwight executes a fake fire drill.
Yeah.
And it's, like, where Save Bandit comes from, where, like, she, like, throws the cat into the ceiling. So... He's the fire safety coordinator, and he was really upset that no one listened to his talk. So he's like, today, smoking's going to save lives. He, like, throws a cigarette into a can of paper. He, like, heats up all the doorknobs. He, like, jams the doors so they can't get out. And then he's like, oh, no, a fire. and they're all panicking and going nuts, and like you see what each character would do in in a crisis. But it's also really, really funny until Stanley has a real heart attack because he's so stressed by the situation, and then they like have to stop everything. So then they also this episode, like events happen, and then Dwight has to go to corporate to like report to like the higher ups about what he did and get reprimanded. And then you see like Michael's like, "We're very mad at you, but we're gonna let this one slide." They're like, "No, we're not." Then they go back to the office. They have to hold a CPR class on the day that Stanley comes back so that everybody knows what to do in the event of a heart attack. But because it's, you know, this group of crazy people, the CPR class doesn't go well. Someone starts singing. Someone starts dancing. Dwight gets involved again. They're like, "He's dead now. Now we have to harvest his organs." He cuts open the CPR dummy. He like cuts off the face Hannibal Lecter style because he thought it was not realistic in the movie and he wanted to see if it would work. He gets called back to corporate again. They're like, "Did you have to do the thing with the face?"
That's a meme.
Oh, okay. His face. That. Well, yeah. So it's just so, so funny. The only thing that's dead weight is the Pam and Jim subplot.
They're the dead weight of the whole fucking show.
Honestly, they kind of are. Maybe that's not an unpopular opinion, but
it's getting more popular.
It's becoming more popular where you're like, "Oh shit, they really kind of suck. They think they're so much better than everybody in that office, and they're really not."
You know what? Jim's a bully too.
You think you're hot shit? You're not hot shit.
I know. You know what? Pam has no talent. She's a bad artist. Come on.
Oh, no.
Come on.
Her stuff is, I don't know. It's really, I would say,
I get that they're supposed to be normal people.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be normal people, but, you know, I don't know. The show wants you to feel like they're the heart, and I feel like, I don't think they're the heart.
No, Michael becomes the heart.
Yeah.
Well,
when they move away from trying to be like the British office, he becomes a better character.
Yes, yeah. Because season one, he's really like...
Some of those episodes are straight up remakes of British episodes.
Yes, and he's really not a lovable character at all because Ricky Gervais' character is really not lovable.
Right.
But I think Steve Carell's really lovable.
Yeah.
And I think that comes through.
Right. Yeah.
Mindy Kaling famously writes about him that Steve Carell, people always ask me if Steve Carell is really that nice. And she's like, "Yes, he's so annoyingly nice that if you try to start talking shit about somebody in front of him, he will just be like, and just excuse himself from the conversation and walk away." She's like, "I hate that about him."
No, I hate that too.
But yeah, so in this one, you see how most of the reasons that Michael is so annoying is because he really means well. And he is like epitome of like the road to hell is paved with good intentions because he's the reason Stanley is so stressed out.
Right.
So it's a fun, fun episode. And I think it's the reason they aired it right after the Super Bowl, besides the fact that NBC was showing the Super Bowl, was that it's just a very strong episode.
Right.
It's a mid season episode it's great. Like I think it got viewers for them. I mean, it certainly got us.
It probably did. Yeah. Mm. Okay. Yeah. I'd not seen that one. I feel like I have seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I haven't revisited since I first watched it.
The Office?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, because it's, I mean, at the time, I think it was syndicated actually. Now with Peacock, I don't know if it would be, but it was one of those things where if it's on anywhere, I'll just like keep it on.
Yeah. I like you have pretty good examples. It's an interesting idea. Do you ever watch shows this way? Do you ever just like...
just pick an episode and watch? If it's no, probably not. I mean, Seinfeld. We do that with Seinfeld. I've never seen the entirety of Seinfeld. I just kind of just pop in.
Right. But you know, it's easier with older. The further back you go, the easier it is because there's less arcs.
They didn't care about arcs, yeah.
Yeah. I mean...
Golden Girls is like that. You can watch any episode of Golden Girls.
Right. Yeah, like newer shows... I can't think of what I was thinking of, but there were some newer shows I thought about that I was just like, I can't, because there are no, you have to be there from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The arc is so important.
Yeah. I mean, anthology shows, but that kind of feels like a cheat because like you don't, like Black Mirror, like you don't have to watch any of the other ones.
Right,
you just watch that.
Right.
Master of None's kind of like that.
Yeah.
I don't know about this new season. I haven't seen it, but...
No, this new season is basically like a long movie.
Oh, okay. The Aziz Ansari seasons, you could pop in. There was kind of an arc happening, but it's really...
Right.
It's not crucial to the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Except when he goes to Italy. That's a different thing.
I think you could pop into New Girl.
You could definitely pop into anywhere. New Girl. Yeah, you kind of get the gist of what's going on.
Right. Literally except for, like, the last couple seasons where... Like, there was that one, like, half a season where... Jess isn't in it.
Right, she was having a baby.
Right, and they got
Megan Fox.
Yeah, you can't jump into those.
No, you're like, wait.
They're not necessarily bad.
No, they're not bad. She's actually very good on the show. But it's, you're like, what?
Yeah, you'd be like, this is not. Yeah, yeah. Well, Janine, thank you so much for this interesting concept.
Thank you for having me. And I encourage anyone listening, just go back, just go watch some episodes, have some fun.
Yeah. You know,
no commitment. These are no strings episodes. Just go in, go out, have a good time.
You know, in general, I'm trying to get more like this in my life.
Okay.
I'm so anal sometimes when it comes to
like being a completionist.
Yeah, yeah, and starting in a certain way, and you know, that doesn't get you anywhere, really.
I know.
Especially because there are things that I wish I knew a little bit about that I should just dip in. Just watch a few.
Yeah.
Because I feel like people back in broadcast days, you would be that way. You would see stuff. It's like now you could easily just like not.
Scrubs is a show like that. You can kind of pop in anywhere.
Anywhere season 2 or 3, I think you'll get a good indication like this is what this show is.
But you like know, like you get the premise. Like this is a doctor show. You get okay. It. That's
they're,
what it is.
They're young doctors learning things.
That's it. Yeah.
Right, right.
Well, procedurals are like that. Like you could go anywhere in Law and Order.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can watch any Judge Judy.
Well.
You don't have to start from the beginning.
You don't? One time I was talking to somebody about PCMC and they were like, I was like, I forget what the episode was. I was like, oh, the last episode was really good, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, I want to start with episode 1. And I was like, don't.
That's right. You're like, don't, not, you're just not going
to. Not that I don't like episode 1, but I was like, there's no need.
The news is not current.
Yeah. I was like, there's no need to start with episode 1. Like the way that I imagine, the way that I go.
You're like,
through,
Avatar is coming out. Yeah. And this is going to be a big one, I think, for Cameron.
The way I go through podcasts is I go through looking at either topics I like or if they cover things, if they're covering things that I like or if they have guests, if it's a guest that I like. And if I really like something, I'll eventually make my way all the way through it. And I imagine that's how people listen to PCMC.
Yeah. I mean, although, you see that all the time in recommendation lists for podcasts.
Yeah.
Not so much TV shows, but they'll do like what episode you should start with the podcast. If you like this, then that's great. It's very few like Serial where you have to start at the beginning.
Although when I look at our analytics after the most popular episode, Fort Sound Effects, often the first episode is there. So people do start
people
with
like,
the
first episode. I'm going to do it.
And the 200th episode, a lot, I think people start with the 200th episode because that's.
Okay, it's a lot of
that tends
like,
to be
clips.
On the top 10 a lot. No, 200 episodes was just us talking.
Oh, it's not the
it's
one
actually
where
not
you
a
get
good
a
indicator of what the show is. But I guess people go, oh, that's a good place to start.
Okay, okay.
I would say if you wanted to get into PCMC, and I don't know how this got about me, you need a Janine episode, am I right?
I mean, I'd say so.
If you want to listen to PCMC, I would just go, I really would go through and just be like, what do you like? Do you like Gilmore Girls? Do you like these topics?
I mean, we have our content, right? Like you're going to get, I feel like old talk shows with Vin, like obscure pop culture ephemera with him.
When I look at the top 10 in the analytics, like it's always it is interesting shit.
I mean, obviously like Anthony's the lit guy.
Yeah.
You get your wholesome content from Jen.
Yeah,
if you need your wholesome fix, you get it from her for sure. You get all your like Disney movies and Gilmore Girls stuff.
All right. We did it. It's so late.
Another one in the can.
It's actually not that late, but when you're old, past 9 is like, what?
Mm-mm.
All right. We end our episode by saying,
go bye-bye.